This weekend starts right after this.
When shopping for car insurance, consider this. GEICO has been saving people money on car insurance for over 75 years. So if you're serious about savings, it's simple. Go to geico.com. After 75 years, they know how to save you money.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This weekend with your host, Gordon Deal.
Underrated internships. I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for spending part of your weekend with us. Here's what's coming up during this hour. A tech expert is warning college students and graduates to not turn their backs on internships in their chosen field, even if they're unpaid. Here is reasoning in about 20 minutes. Also, not enough hours in the day for a spin class and work? What if the two are combined? Find out what some gyms now offer. Also, one of the biggest hurdles for the U.S. track and field team during the Olympics will be the bad traffic in Rio. Some athletes are considering extreme commuting options. And Guns N' Roses rolls into Nashville this weekend, part of their long-awaited reunion tour. Despite their differences, it seems the money is too good to turn away.
The biggest factor probably with a lot of these reunions, obviously, is just huge offers made to groups, everyone from the Replacements to the Smiths. I mean, you'd be surprised how big these offers can get.
Wall Street Journal reporter Neil Shah on the reunion tour for GNR and the lure of big money. He's here later in the hour. Well, here's one way to characterize the upcoming presidential election. Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump will be counting on a large chunk of supporters who don't much care for the candidate of their choice. In the 2016 election, there are issues of trustworthiness, dishonesty, intolerance, lack of values. Wall Street Journal writer Neil King has a look at how some voters can look negatively on a candidate and still vote for him or her. Neil, explain.
You know, I think a lot of people are familiar with the fact that this election is looking unusual in a bunch of ways, and one of them is we have two candidates, Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton, who are regarded in unusually negative ways by voters in general. They are the most negatively held almost nominees that we've seen in recent times. What's interesting about this sort of overwhelming negativity around them is that it's shared by even their own supporters. Right. So if you ask the most basic question, which is, do you look at this person in a positive or a negative way, really high number, about 60% for Trump and about 55% towards Hillary Clinton of the voters that we polled in our last poll look at those candidates negatively. But if you then look at their own, at the people that then say, if the election were being held tomorrow, I would vote for Donald Trump or I'd vote for Hillary Clinton, equal number, 13% of their own supporters look at them negatively. Just by way of comparison, if you were to go back to a similar poll, or basically the exact same poll we took 4 years ago when it was Barack Obama and Mitt Romney, 2% of Obama's supporters looked at him negatively, and 5% of Mitt Romney's supporters looked at him negatively. So we're talking about significantly different numbers just in the basic kind of positive-negative framework when it comes to these candidates.
So what about the mindset, then, of the voter who believes that the candidate is unlikable or untrustworthy, for example, as you even bring up in the piece?
Well, the thing that's actually, so just beyond that main question, we then went a lot farther and we took kind of the main sort of imputed negative characteristics that we think of when we think of Donald Trump or Hillary Clinton, and then we asked voters about that. So when it comes to Donald Trump, we asked, do you think he's too volatile or lacking in the right patience or temperament for the job? Really basic thing. Does he make statements that are offensive or intolerant? Does he lack core principles and beliefs, etc.? And with each of those, 60% or more of all respondents said yes to those basic core kind of competency temperament questions. Those were serious enough to be a concern in electing Mr. Trump president. So over 60%. Some of them, one case, it was almost up to 69%. But among the supporters of Donald Trump, a quarter of his supporters said yes as well to those questions, or even more, which is pretty amazing when you think that these are the kind of things that you would normally think would be sort of disqualifying if you're looking at a candidate like, you know, do you think that he lacks the proper temperament? temperament for the job. And then you'd say, yeah, I actually do think he lacks that, and yet I support him all the same. And so if you go on to Mrs. Clinton, Hillary Clinton, similar sort of thing, we ask, does she have a record of being dishonest and untrustworthy? Is she too close to Wall Street? Has she made wrong decisions on foreign policy? Is she more of the same in a way that can't bring about the change that you think the country needs? And again, among all respondents, about 60% said yes to all of those. Those are a real concern in electing a president. But even more so than Donald Trump, her own supporters were particularly high. So 41%, for instance, of Hillary Clinton's own supporters said that she has a record of being dishonest. 39% said she's too close to Wall Street. And there was about a third that said that she's made the wrong decisions on foreign policy or represented more of the same. So those are some pretty unusually sour attitudes among even the people that support those candidates.
We're speaking with the Wall Street Journal's Neil King. His piece is called Welcome to the Ultimate Hold Your Nose Election. So what percentage, I guess, for what percentage of voters will this upcoming election be about choosing the lesser of two evils then?
This is an election that's just really, at the moment, amazing for kind of the lack of real overlap that these candidates have with, like, core beliefs of a lot of their supporters. Obviously, each of them has a real base of people that look positively towards them and think that they share the same common beliefs, etc. But it looks as if we're talking about a quarter or more of the people that may, in the end, go and vote for them in November who will be doing it with large amounts of reservations about that person. One of the things that we asked, which is a pretty basic thing, is does this person have a background and set of values that you can identify with? Pretty fundamental thing, right? And so if you go back over the last several elections, almost all candidates had over 50% on that question. So that, you know, when it came to John McCain or Barack Obama or Mitt Romney, for the most part, half or more of the country said, yeah, I think they share my common values. In this poll, 30% of people said that of Donald Trump, 36% said that of Hillary Clinton. That's pretty unusual, where you have, you know, large numbers of people saying that they don't look at them as sharing their common values, and a minority saying that they do. So it looks, at least at the moment, that the next president of the United States will be elected with a lot of people saying that that person, even if they voted for them, doesn't really overlap that much with their set of values.
Thanks, Neil. Wall Street Journal reporter Neil King. 13 minutes now after the hour. On This Weekend.
You're a small to mid-sized business with 300 to 3,000 employees. You face the same network security challenges as big businesses do, but can't support a big IT investment, leaving your doors open to advanced cyber threats. Barracuda Next Generation Firewalls provide all the core features of enterprise firewalls and UTMs, but without hidden costs and deployment hurdles, making owning a big business firewall no big deal for your SMB. Reclaim your network. Try a Barracuda Next Gen Firewall risk-free at barracuda.com/firewalls.
Give your employees the power to do their best work with new, powerfully performing Dell Latitude business class laptops and 2-in-1s. Now with Windows 10, the fastest, smoothest, most secure Windows ever. Your team can reduce downtime by 50%. And boost productivity with 4 times faster performance and 3 times more battery life. Learn more at Dell.com/radio. That's Dell.com/radio. Thanks for spending time with us. Well, gyms think they have a new way to attract more members and keep their current ones lingering a little longer. Offer you space to do your work for those who do so remotely. More from This Weekend's Jennifer Koschenka.
Here's yet another reason to go to the gym to get work done. Health clubs are starting to cater to members who also want to set up laptops and hang around for a while. Rachel Bachman of the Wall Street Journal has more on this trend. Rachel, why would anyone want to do work at a gym?
Well, that's a good question. As we probably have noticed from folks we know in our lives, people are working remotely more and more, not going to a traditional office every day necessarily. And a lot of people have done this in coffee shops or maybe actually paid a monthly fee to rent a co-working space or work from home. And this is just an outgrowth of that. You know, a lot of people are going to gyms anyway, some of them full-service health clubs, and they started working in cafes and lounges, and it's just taken off.
Isn't it a little too chaotic to get work done at a gym?
I think it really depends on the gym. Some are very loud and really don't have anywhere to sit if you want to actually get some work done. But others are really taking sort of traditional lounge or meeting spaces where they intended people to hang out or maybe have a cup of coffee and are, you know, beefing up their Wi-Fi there, adding outlets or USB ports so that people can actually kind of camp out for a few hours and do some actual work. So a lot of people like it. And in fact, they've told me that they like to have a little bit of activity and a little bit of noise around them while they work.
Rachel, what are some of the other benefits for setting up shop in a gym workspace?
Well, a lot of people said that they liked being able to break up their workday. You know, they could go to a yoga class at noon, or I talked to one guy who launched a startup basically at a climbing gym. And this gym had stand-up desks where he could write code for an hour, and then he'd take a 10-minute break and climb up a wall. And, in fact, it was on one of his climbing sessions that he had sort of a eureka moment and thought of his product idea that he is now selling.
Why does the gym want you there?
Well, we're talking mainly about higher-end gyms, you know, the ones that, depending on the city you live in, might cost $75 to $150, even $200 a month. So they're already offering a whole array of services to members. We're not talking about the Planet Fitnesses and kind of the bare-bones gyms, but the higher-end gyms really want people to stay and linger. That means they might buy more things in the cafe. They might reserve a massage appointment, things like that. And, you know, a place to work also gives more people a reason to keep their gym membership, which, you know, we all need from time to time, especially if you're paying, you know, more than $100 a month.
Rachel, is there ever an issue between the people working out and the people who are trying to work?
Well, I think the people working out take precedent over the ones who are working. So I haven't heard of many conflicts, but I think when those arise, the people, you know, dropping the weights or in spinning class would definitely prevail in that conflict.
Along those same lines, I know a lot of gyms, you're not allowed to use a smartphone in certain areas or a camera in certain areas. Would this not be somewhat of an issue, maybe?
Yeah, I think that, you know, increasingly these places are really designating spaces where people can work and relax. And they tend to be, you know, lobby type areas, cafes, lounges. Some even have conference rooms that members can reserve if they want to actually meet with other people. So these are not the kinds of like locker room areas or, you know, saunas, steam baths, things like that, where, you know, cameras would definitely be forbidden or smartphones. These are, you know, typically designated, somewhat separated areas where people can work.
Thanks, Rachel. Wall Street Journal reporter Rachel Bachman with this weekend's Jennifer Koshenka. 21 minutes now after the hour on This Weekend. Thanks for spending time with us. Summer is the time, as you know, for many internships. In today's job market, experience matters. So taking that low or no pay internship now can pay off big time in the long run. So says tech analyst Rob Enderle, principal of the Enderle Group. Rob, set this up.
I had a conversation, as it turned out, with my dentist as I was having my teeth cleaned, and we were chatting about internships, and they had an intern in the room, and the result was is we were chatting about the fact that so many people give up internships, and it's a mistake, and because they're free, and the reason why it's important is often when folks are looking for a job, one of the big problems is the company wants somebody with experience, and it's a catch-22 kind of thing where, you know, you can't get a job unless you have experience, and you can't get experience unless you get a job.
Yeah.
So we were kind of sharing stories about how the people that we knew had gone around, had used these unpaid internships to kind of get around that particular problem, and he had a good one. It was with regard to an EMT, and they'd all come out, a bunch of friends had come out of college, none of them could find jobs. He found this one work-for-free job, and did it for a year, and then they crafted the job for him, so other candidates could actually qualify, and then they fast tracked him into management. By the end of his first year getting paid, he was in management. He'd received several increases and was into management.
Wow.
All because he took that 1 year. These unpaid internships not only allow you to hit the ground running when you get hired, but allow you to get a higher salary, get promoted more quickly. Well, it's kind of like school, except you're not paying for it. I mean, you get another year of better than college level education for free, yeah, you're having to work, but is it any different than doing all the schoolwork you did while you're going to school? Now, if you were a top performer in school, you were, you know, you're probably putting in 12-hour days anyway.
Your point was a good one, too. You said school doesn't teach how to do a job. Generally, it teaches you how to learn and gives you a foundation to learn from. So to that point, though, you don't get hung up on the paid versus unpaid. Just get in the door.
Well, treat it more like free college. And instead of looking at the fact like, well, you know, I'm working for free, they don't value me, take that first year and consider it another year of college that will make it so you get a higher salary, faster promotion, and you'll have a better sense of where you want to be when you finally get that paid job. Because the other thing that school really doesn't teach you is that it doesn't teach you what you want to do either. As we pointed out, it teaches you how to learn, but it really doesn't help you much in terms of picking the job that you want. And in that year, you'll undoubtedly find if you want to make this a career or not. And I know a lot of people, when they came out of school, they got their first job, they stayed in that thing all the way through, and they hated it. So the end result is it gives you a much better start to have the internship. You know, some people actually do the internships in their senior year of school, and they get that way they come out with the experience and the degree at the same time. But though that's much tougher because, you know, if you want to keep your GPA up, it does require a lot of time. And if you're working for free and going to school, that's a pretty heavy load. But once again, I've seen folks do it, and they come out and hit the ground running just as well.
We're speaking with tech analyst Rob Enderle. His piece is called Why Unpaid Internships Are Underrated. Startups versus established firms. Any recommendation either way?
Well, it kind of depends on where you want to go. A startup gives you an awful lot of breadth. You're kind of part of the family. It's incredibly exciting, but the job at the end isn't as certain because who knows what's going to happen to startups. I mean, most startups actually fail. So it's good experience. It can be a ton of fun, but the job at the end of the process is a lot less certain. Established firm, it's going to be there, and that better chance that they're going to have an opening for you at the end of the internship, and it's a paid opening. They're not going to continue to ask you to work for free. So you've got a better chance of having a job, but it's not as exciting. You're much more pigeonholed. You've got to pick up on politics far better, and you probably won't advance as quickly. So there's the trade-offs. And you know, if you're going to take risks, I'm a big believer. You take the risks when you're young, because when you're old and you have a family, you're not going to want to take them. So if you ever want to do a startup, this is probably the time.
Thanks, Rob. It's tech analyst Rob Enderle, principal of the Enderle Group. It's 30 minutes now after the hour on This Weekend. Need a website? Why not do it yourself with Wix.com? No matter what business you're in, Wix.com has something for you. Used by more than 84 million people worldwide, Wix.com makes it easy to get your website live today. You need to get the word out about your business. It all starts with a stunning website. With hundreds of designer-made, customizable templates to choose from and the drag-and-drop editor, there is no coding needed. You don't need to be a programmer or designer to create something beautiful. You can do it yourself with Wix.com. Wix.com empowers business owners to create their own professional websites every day. When you're running your own business, you're bound to be busy. Too busy. Too busy worrying about your budget. Too busy scheduling appointments. Too busy to build a website for your business. And because you're too busy, it has to be easy. And that's where Wix.com comes in. With Wix.com, it's easy and free. Go to Wix.com to create your own website today. The result is stunning. Thanks for being with us. Coming up this half hour, what to call Bill Clinton if Hillary wins the election. Also, how we get something on the calendar like National Fried Clam Day. How and why Guns N' Roses got back together. And one of the biggest hurdles at the Olympics for the U.S. track and field team next month will be traffic in Rio. How will they avoid being late to an event? That story in about 20 minutes. As you probably know, the role of First Lady could go to a man, and not just any man, a former president. It's tricky and somewhat amusing to think about what we might call Bill Clinton if his wife wins the presidency in November. It's a story from USA Today reporter Emily Brown. Emily, what are you hearing?
Well, I'm hearing a lot of stuff on Twitter that I can't repeat, but a lot of suggestions from people. But it's a pretty fun thing to think about, but it is a serious question. And what would we call Bill Clinton if Hillary is elected? And one thing to think about is not only is he the first male that would be in this office, but to throw a wrench in everything, He's a former president. And so he already has a title that he's still using, and that just kind of complicates things a little bit more.
It just doesn't seem like any other title can do a former president justice.
It can't, and that's kind of what it comes down to, is that the title that he will always carry with him, which is Mr. President, trumps any other title, and he would only be a custodian of this office of the First Lady, and therefore he will always have the title of Mr. President, and that's always going to be with him, so you're not really going to downgrade his title for a few years while he's in this office.
Yeah, geez. All right, so what are the going bets right now, like First Gentleman?
First Gentleman is definitely the first thing that everyone thinks of. It sounds like the opposite of First Lady. If you look across the country at the six female governors who are in office in the United States right now, their husbands are unofficially referred to as First Gentlemen. Hmm. And so that kind of sets a precedent. But as the historian that I spoke with, William Steele, he kind of chuckled at that and just said, you know, that would be so corny in the context of the White House. And so no one really thought that that is what he will be called. I could see it happening in the media. And, I mean, I think people are going to have a lot of fun with this if it happens. And like I said, on Twitter, there are a lot of suggestions about what he could be called, and not all of them I could repeat. But First Gentleman sounds like an obvious, but it sounds like really it's just going to be how we write it and how we say it, because he will always be Mr. President. So it'll be something like, you know, walking into the room would be Madam President or President Hillary Clinton and her husband, former President Bill Clinton.
Yeah.
I think like we saw with the Bushes, we're just going to have to clarify who we're speaking about.
We're speaking with Emily Brown, senior mobile editor at USA Today. She's got an interesting look at what would happen if Hillary Clinton were elected president and what we would call former President Bill Clinton. I thought it was interesting, too, in the story where you said the Clintons could potentially have to rename what is actually called the Office of the First Lady, right? And they're going to have to do that perhaps in a way to allow for perhaps another female president who takes office whose husband is not a former president, right?
Right. I mean, they can name it anything they want. Just like the title First Lady, the title of the office of the First Lady, it's not official, and it can change with every incoming administration. It just hasn't. So it'll be interesting to see what they name that. They could call it something like the Office of Former President Bill Clinton.
Oh, okay.
But if they want to set a legacy and have it stick, and they could say something like the office of the presidential spouse or the president's spouse. And it would be interesting to see, you know, if that's what they do, if they're in office, or, well, if Hillary's in office, if they do something like that that is kind of gender neutral, would that stick afterwards, or would it change back to First Lady?
Thanks, Emily. USA Today reporter Emily Brown. It's 21 minutes now before the hour on this weekend. Thanks for being with us. Ever wonder how some of these unusual National Day of Something get their days? For example, this weekend, Saturday is National Sugar Cookie Day. Sunday is National Pina Colada Day. They're courtesy of groups like National Calendar Day, a little-known group in Mandan, North Dakota. The story is from Market Watch reporter Jillian Berman. Jillian, take us through this.
You know, we've all seen all of the social media posts touting National Fried Clam Day, National Sunglasses Day, I think was earlier this month. And so we wanted to just kind of take a look at where all of those come from and how it seems like everything can get its own day.
It does seem that way. All right, so how does this work?
So there are a few different sources for this kind of stuff. And one of the big ones is this website called National Day Calendar, and they track about 1,200 different national days. So you go on their website, you click on a day, and you can see, you know, what different national holidays are for that date. But in addition to that, they let people buy their own spot on the calendar. So there's an intense application process, but if you make it through, then you get a spot on the calendar and you pay a little bit for it.
Wow. All right, so maybe what's involved in the cost here, and do these companies or businesses think it's worth it?
Yeah, so the cost cost can be up to $4,500. It's between $2,300 and $4,500, depending on how much assistance you want from National Day Calendar in promoting your holiday. And a lot of the companies that I spoke to did seem to think it was worth it, which was sort of, you know, honestly a little bit surprising to me. But, you know, they said that it helps to increase their sales. In some cases, you know, it helps kind of verify maybe a story that they told about themselves, made the business seem a little bit more official. So they typically said that it was worth it.
Wow. And this is generally done, I guess, by an entire industry, right? Not necessarily a business.
Right. Yeah. So, you know, so some of them can be, can be purchased by an entire industry. A lot of the, you know, many of the holidays that sort of these national days that we may be familiar with, even if they don't have a, you know, a purchased spot on this calendar, a lot of the way that we know them is from industry groups promoting them. So, for example, National Donut Day, which was originally started by the Salvation Army, gets, you know, sort of a lot of its publicity from Krispy Kreme and Dunkin' Donuts doing promotions on those days.
We're speaking with Market Watch reporter Jillian Berman. Her piece is called Happy National Fried Clam Day. So but what are some of the more unusual ones, I guess, if that one qualifies as one, too?
Yeah, so that one was pretty strange. And one thing that I found researching this was there's also a National Deep Fried Clams Day. So there's even a little bit of competition there. And, you know, another one that I looked at was National Strawberry Rhubarb Wine Day. You know, there's National Coloring Book Day. There's, you know, almost anything you could imagine, really.
Wow. All right, so how many other groups, I guess, besides this I don't know, the National Day Calendar offers something like this, or is there actually a competition among those groups?
There are, yeah. So another gentleman that I spoke to, he runs a website called Foodimentary, and it's sort of a food blog. And the way that he first started to get publicity for it was by just designating different food holidays. And, you know, he would do some social media around them, and it kind of blew up. And he started his website in 2006, so he's been doing this for a while.
It's Market Watch reporter Jillian Berman. By the way, back to work Monday with National Cheer Up the Lonely Day and National Mojito Day. It's 14 minutes now in front of the hour on This Weekend. Everyone knows that business is all about numbers. Consider the numbers the state of Michigan can offer your business, like 10, being in the top 10 states for lowest corporate business income tax, or 2,000. The number of burdensome regulations Michigan has eliminated in the last 5 years. And 6, Michigan's rank for best entrepreneurial climates, which all adds up to the one state that has all that and more, Michigan. Go to MichiganBusiness.org to learn more. Nashville is softening the country music a bit this weekend to make way for Guns N' Roses, which is in the midst of a reunion tour that began in April and ends next month in Southern California. Meanwhile, arriving at an agreement to tour was a long, slow process, especially since members of the band went years without speaking. But it's important for the concert industry, according to Wall Street Journal reporter Neil Shaw. Neil, begin with the breakup.
It's a complicated mess, what happened to Guns N' Roses in the 1990s. After becoming a huge global force in terms of their records and touring in the late 80s and early 90s, they actually fairly quickly imploded, lost some band members, and then essentially after their big album Appetite for Destruction in 87, they put out a follow-up after several years, Use Your Illusion, in 1991, then there was a long tour. When that tour ended, there was a period of inactivity, and all of the tensions in the band kind of came to a head and drove the members apart. Some of the key things that they fought over, the band's name. Over time, Axl Rose tried to exert more and more control over the band and its business, and in specifically by having more control over the band's name. So these are some of the tensions that, when the band got off the road and were back in their respective houses, slowly drove them apart, and slowly the band just broke up.
We're speaking with Wall Street Journal reporter Neil Shaw. His piece is called Guns N' Roses Puts It Back Together. Wow. All right, so what could possibly have brought them back together, Neil?
It's a combination of several things that transpired over a series of years. Essentially, you know, these guys fought over various things like merch or the name for several years through lawyers, but they didn't really talk to each other. They just were on email chains, as you can imagine. They really didn't talk at all. In 2010, Duff McKagan, the bassist, was in London and doing some other business. He actually ran into Axl Rose in a hotel because Axl was playing with his version of Guns N' Roses in London at that time. They made up. They hugged. They went out to dinner. They went on a boat and just kind of talked things through and realized they didn't have that much bad blood. That led to a rapprochement between them. Duff actually guested on some Axl Guns N' Roses shows in 2014. And so they repaired relations. Slash and Axl hadn't talked for many, many years. It's possible Duff played kind of a peacemaker role. And what happened is essentially Axl and Slash started cooperating more. They started, their business camp started cooperating more and putting out more Guns N' Roses projects that required both of their sign-offs.
Okay.
Their two businesses started cooperating more, and then as that happened, eventually they reached out to each other and tried to kind of establish a détente. I think folks in Axl's camp reached out to Slash, who probably was open to a reunion for many years.
Boy. All right, so as you point out in the story, that could really leave just Led Zeppelin, right? We get them back together, and kind of the hard rock will be complete with its reunions.
It's an interesting thing. A lot of rock celebrities and celebrities in general have passed away this year. It's on people's minds. It's a demographic thing. An entire generation is moving into their 60s and 70s, and so we're seeing more of these celebrity deaths, just Gary Shandling recently. Part of that is we're kind of running out of reunions, at least when it comes to rock. Led Zeppelin has gotten together a couple times. They haven't toured, but that would be the other big great white whale in the rock industry would be a Led Zeppelin reunion. But really, we don't have a lot more after that that's on that level.
Thanks, Neil. Wall Street Journal reporter Neil Shah. 6 minutes now before the hour on This Weekend. Hey, glad you're with us. So one of the unusual hurdles the USA track and field team faces at the Summer Olympics in Rio next month will be the commute from the Athletes' Village. Unlike most of the venues, the stadium where track and field events will be staged is a roughly 45 to 60 minute ride from the Athletes' Village, even without accounting for Rio's notorious traffic snarls. The distance will make it difficult for athletes to commute back and forth between events and will likely force athletes with early heats to wake up at dawn to get to their competition. The Wall Street Journal says some are considering extreme measures to manage that commute. The agent for decathlete Ashton Eaton says they've had conversations with Nike, his sponsor, about possibly renting apartments near the facilities or renting a helicopter. Kate Grace, an 800-meter runner who made her first Olympic team this past week, is deciding where to stay. Opt for the safety of the Olympic Village but endure long commutes for those daily workouts, or try to secure housing close to the stadium and risk personal security. That'll do it for this hour. Thanks for listening to This Weekend.